Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Trippi.com, which is a leading travel community filled with experienced travelers who can answer your travel questions. Great answers, great people. Check out Trippi.com next time you plan a trip. This episode is also sponsored by DK Eyewitness Travel Guides. These beautiful and informative guidebooks are my guidebook of choice. Learn more about DK Travel Guides at DK.com. Amateur Traveler, episode 445. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about crystal blue waters, white sandy beaches, and a warm and inviting culture as we go to Fiji. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. We'll hear more from our two sponsors later on in the show, but first, let's hear about Fiji. I'd like to welcome back to the show David Brody from Travel in 10, who's come to talk to us about Fiji. David, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much.
And I say welcome back. We were looking to see the last time David was on the show. David's been on the show once. It was episode 127, which was about Cambodia. So that had to be something like 6.5 years ago.
But we've ran into each other a few times since then.
We have. In fact, David and I presented together at the TBEX conference in Cancun, Mexico recently. So, but you did a recent trip to Fiji, and I wanted to get you on the show to talk about that because Fiji is not one of the destinations we have talked about, strangely enough. But why should someone go to Fiji?
Well, Fiji, it's interesting. Of all the places I've been around the world, Fiji is one of the ones that really drew me back. I had a chance to, on one of my first big international trips, stopped over there on a flight to Australia. So sort of spent 3 or 4 hours in the airport, got to see what an amazing looking place it was, but didn't get to experience any of it. And then years later was on a sort of round the world cruise where we sailed through Fiji. So again, got to see it in the distance, but not experience it. So this was my 40th birthday. I wanted to take a big trip somewhere around the world. And if I could have gone anywhere, Fiji was the place. So that's where we decided to take off to.
So the second time you were there, you were on a round the world cruise. How long did that take?
It was a 3-month trip. A thing through the Japanese government, an exchange program where they took a whole bunch of youth from around the world to travel to different countries around the world.
Wow. And you were there not as a youth, I assume, but in your role as a travel PR representative?
No, this was back many years ago. I was one of the participating youth when I first went on the cruise. Yeah, for
Excellent.
Sure.
Excellent. So it had been some time since you had been to Fiji.
Absolutely. Yes.
And what were the highlights for you? What would you recommend for an itinerary of seeing Fiji? And we should say, I think you probably put it in context there, that we're talking about an island in the Pacific on the way to Australia. So,
well, we're talking actually about 300 islands in the Pacific on the way to Australia.
Is it that many? Okay.
It is a massive group of islands. And of the 300, we probably saw about 20 of them during our 2-week stay. So I probably got to see a better chunk of it than a lot of guests do. We did a boat trip that took us through sort of a series of islands, the Mamanuka Islands, Niasawa Islands, which are absolutely spectacular. I mean, when you think of a South Pacific paradise, this is exactly what you imagine. Crystal clear waters and white sand beaches and just amazing culture and incredibly friendly people.
Cool. And so you flew into the capital, I assume?
We did, into Nadi, which is the main international airport. It's not the political capital, but it is certainly the main transit point that most people fly into. And from there, sort of the standard itinerary, most people end up staying their first few days in a place called Port Denaru. And Port Denaru is this sort of enclave of probably 8 or 9 international hotel brands that have huge resorts there and golf courses and things all set up on the beaches down there. Beautiful resorts. But the one thing I would say about Port Dinarou is it's a great place after you've taken a long flight to spend a couple of days and sort of acclimatize yourself before going out and exploring the rest of Fiji. But it's certainly not the place where you would want to spend your entire trip, because you really don't get to experience much of the real Fiji there. The beaches are not great. I mean, it's not a place that you'd want to go snorkeling, for example. The water's quite dark and murky around Port Dinarou. But the resorts themselves are beautiful. But it's really much more of a transit point. And from there, it really is a jumping off point where you can do a series of boat trips to a number of the islands throughout the island groups.
And is that really the way to see some of the other islands? There really isn't an option of flying to different islands, and so it's a boat trip is usually the best way?
I mean, it depends on the type of experience you want to have. And one of the things you're going to find there is a lot of very exclusive, very high-end resorts. So, for example, there was one that we were staying across the bay from. You know, all the guests were being flown in by helicopter directly from the airport when they landed. I think it was about $4,000 a night, and you got the island to yourself, essentially. Lots of places you can helicopter into. The number of float planes that go to the different resorts that are more moderately priced as well. But then there's also regular boat service that gets out as well. But it does take, to get to the parts of Fiji that you really, as a tourist, are most going to want to see, most of those islands, it's a good 2.5-3 hour boat ride by sort of high speed catamarans that go out of Port Dinarou, which is why most people, once they've come off an international flight, end up basing themselves out of Port Dinarou for the first couple of days before they make their way out.
Got it. So what was your itinerary then?
We spent the first 3 days in Port Dinarou and exploring a little bit around there. One of the things we found that was great, initially we were looking at renting a car and touring around the island. Car rentals was not very cost-effective. They're quite expensive to rent cars. But what was surprisingly cost-effective was arranging for a car and driver. For about $100 per day, you could hire out a brand new SUV, a local Fijian who would take you and really give you a very customized cultural experience. We went up to an amazing place called the Nasuri Highlands in the interior of the main island there, just a little bit north of Nadi. And you get up there and it is very remote villages, still the majority of people there living a subsistence lifestyle in very traditional sort of thatch housing. You've got an opportunity to go visit one of those traditional villages, drink kava, which is one of the traditional drinks there, experience some of the local food, visit one of the local schools. We went to this amazing waterfall, which is sort of crystal clear, warm water that you could swim through as well. And having the car and driver for the day, you could really go into these remote, unexplored places that just a lot of other tourists weren't seeing.
Now, you say the car and driver, was that less expensive than just getting the car?
It actually was. Like, if we were going to rent a rental car, I think it was about $120, $130 US per day for a rental car, plus gas, plus everything else, versus the cars and drivers that you could hire out for the day at the resort for $100-some to take you out for the day. So
that's the oddest thing. I don't think I've ever heard of that before.
Very strange. I don't know if it was because of insurance reasons or whatever else.
You'd have to wonder at that point.
Yeah.
Interesting. Anything else that you wanted to cover on that island before we take off in the boat?
Another very cool place was Sabado Hot Springs and Mud Pools. Again, sort of a remote destination, a little bit off the beaten track, where you go into this essentially field where they've got a number of volcanic mud baths. They've got thatched huts where you can go for a massage. You've got hot springs there as well. Great, fun place to spend a day as well. One other thing that I would mention as well from that first few days of the trip is we were lucky enough to have landed on a Sunday. And we were talking to the concierge of the hotel, asking what are some of the more interesting local things to do around here. And they asked if we'd ever been to a Fijian church service, which of course we hadn't, and recommended to go check one out. And we don't regularly go to church, but going to the church services there was phenomenal. The singing is just unlike anything you've ever heard. I mean, just remarkable choirs of people. It's really hard to describe. You've got to be there to hear it. But you hear the singing everywhere you go. When you go to individual islands, there's often these cultural celebrations. But it is a very religious country. Church is a big part of it. And families all come together on Sundays and just this amazing singing that even if you never attend church elsewhere in the world, it's somewhere where on a Sunday, if you're there, it's something you've absolutely got to go do.
I want to take a break here to hear from our first of the two sponsors. As I mentioned in the pre-roll for the show, that part of the audio we do before we begin the show, we are announcing a new sponsor this week, which is Trippi.com. And Trippi is an online travel community. One of Trippy's core values is pay it forward. As they say, Trippy is for people who like to do good. We are helpers. No question is too great or too small. We've all experienced the kindness of strangers on our journeys and love to keep that momentum going by sharing with others. I want to encourage you to support Trippy, who is supporting this podcast. One of the ways we're going to do that is a question of the week. I'll put a link in the show notes. I'd like you to go over to Trippy and answer this question. Where is the most remote beach you have ever gone to? I'm not going to give anything away here, but if you look at my answer over on Trippy, you'll hear about crawling through a series of water caves to get to my favorite beach in the world. So go answer our question of the week at trippy.com. I'll be reading some of my favorite answers on this show next week. So then you get on the boat, but we're not talking about a cruise boat, but you're just doing a island hopping for a few hours, then out to your next destination.
For our first trip, that's what we did. Was just essentially it's a water taxi. It takes about 200 okay. or so passengers, stops at a number of islands. And our first destination was a place called Malolo Island. Very family-focused resort. It's owned by local Fijians. You're on a beautiful white sand beach. It's just a great place for relaxing, sitting back, and having an incredibly relaxing vacation. Great snorkeling and diving directly off the beach. So we had sort of a beach hut that was right there, beachfront. Two steps out the door, you were in the water, and just amazing sea life all around you. Everything from stingrays to every type of tropical fish you could imagine sort of surrounding you the moment you hit the water. They also had things like you could go out paddle boarding, you could go out kayaking, all from the resort, different tours that they would do on a daily basis, and then a number of different cultural activities and things there as well.
And you mentioned family friendly. You were there, I assume, with your wife and two kids, if I have the number correctly?
That's right. Two little guys, a three-year-old and a five-year-old. And one of the things that you really notice in Fiji is society there is very much still organized around villages and sort of a tribal lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And when you come as a visitor, you are incorporated straight into that. I have never been somewhere more welcoming with kids than they were in Fiji. I mean, people scoop up your kids from your arms and take them off and are engaging them in local games and activities. And so much so that when we were in Nadi, which is a sort of a mid-sized city, probably I would guess sort of a 40 or 50,000 person city, we were out shopping one day and our five-year-old was looking at some dresses while our three-year-old was off looking at guitars or toys or something else in the corner. And we turned around for a moment and our five-year-old was gone. And so for a moment, we were a bit panicked and started looking around. And it took about 2 minutes to find her. And we went back and she was actually back in the change rooms. Three Fijian women were with her and they had probably 10 dresses picked out. And she was already on her third dress that she had tried on with them. And if it was anywhere else in the world, you would have been panicked. But there is just what they do, right? It's just, it was great just how welcoming people were and how good they were with the kids.
And I'm curious, three and five, very different ages from 40. And yeah. They won't necessarily remember this trip, or at least the three-year-old won't necessarily. But for them, they haven't been to as many places as you were. What stood out for them for Fiji?
Unquestionably, the cultural experience. It was just so different than their day-to-day life here in North America. It's really, sure. I mean, if you've been to a place like Hawaii, in Hawaii you get sort of the cultural shows that show you what the culture almost essentially used to be like, right, 100 sure. years ago in Hawaii. When you're going to Fiji, particularly to some of the outer islands, it really is the way people still live on a day-to-day basis, right? It's very much people living on subsistence agriculture. We were going to islands at times that there were maybe 500 people living on an island with a single generator, a single satellite phone, and that was the only access to the outside world they had, other than the once a week that a boat came by with a few visitors. So you're really getting to access some very remote parts of the world, and they loved it in terms of the kids and things that they got to meet. It was incredible.
So good snorkeling, but not necessarily fast internet out there on a remote island. I should necessarily move the travel blog out there.
It would be tough to do the travel blog, particularly our next stop after Malolo Island was getting on a sort of very small cruise ship. It was about 150 person cruise ship that took you through a series of islands, and we had internet on board, but it would take, if you wanted to download a song, it was probably about 3 days until you got that song. So.
Well, that works okay on island time, but
that's right.
Anything else about Malolo Island?
Well, another thing that I would say was a highlight there was the food. They had a couple who were the chefs who had come over to the island, a South African and Canadian couple who were running all the food services there. Great chefs, great experience in terms of the food.
And when you say food a lot of seafood, I would assume. But what kind of food are you having?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have a mix of sort of international dishes that you would get anywhere around the world. In terms of local cuisine, it's absolutely a lot of seafood, a lot of fresh produce, a lot of coconut incorporated into everything, local fruits incorporated into everything as well, depending on the time of year you're there and the season. And the other thing is it's quite influenced by Indian culture. A large portion of the population are Indian Fijians, so a lot of curries and papadoms and things like that as well.
Okay, excellent. Where to next?
So next after that, we boarded a trip with Captain Cook Cruises.
Okay, sure, yeah.
Sort of this small format cruise ship, about 150 passengers, and we went through two groups of islands, the Mamanuka Islands and the Yasawa Islands. It was 7 days on board the boat, and if there was a highlight of the trip, that cruise experience really was it, because it's almost as though the further away you get from Port Daneru, the more you get to see of the real culture of Fiji and the more of sort of that picture postcard type beaches and islands that you would imagine as well as you're getting off into these more remote locations. So about 15, 20 islands that over the course of the 7 days that you visit, really interesting cultural experiences along the way.
So small boat cruise. So we're not talking a lot of shuffleboard or midnight buffets or things like that.
Not a lot of that. No, a lot more of one of the things that they were really set up for was getting you out into the water. So they had these sort of little skiff boats on the back that would take 20 or 30 passengers out and get you into really remote locations for snorkeling and diving. And every day you basically had two different sites that you would go to for beach experiences, snorkeling and diving. Quite often the beaches you were going to, you're on a deserted island that you were the only people on that beach or on that island entirely. Normally sort of two locations like that throughout the day that you would experience. And then in the evenings, most times you were going into a more remote village. And that may be for dinner on the island and a feast that the local community would cook for you. That may be visiting a school. And the schools are amazing because most of them are boarding schools where it's children from 15 or 20 of the even more remote islands would come into one central location. And that was great for the kids, particularly that part, getting to meet them and the experiences at the schools there.
Excellent. And of that whole week, which islands stand out?
That's a good question. Probably the one that stands out the most in my mind was one of the most remote places we went, a place called the Waia Islands. What stood out most was just the friendliness of the people. I mean, this was one of the islands where we did go visit the school. About 500 kids there between probably 6 and 12 who want to better themselves, a better education. So they've come in from the remote islands, are there to attend school, and so friendly, just the most friendly people you've ever met on the island. And touring through it, the local villagers would take you through and really wanted to give you the experience of seeing what their day-to-day life was like. So taking you through the field, seeing how they grow the crops, just the way that they live on a day-to-day basis was so interesting to see.
Interesting. Now, so you're out, there are sort of two major islands in the Fijian islands, but you're out away from that and some of the smaller ones is my impression.
Correct. And the two island groups that we went to, the Mamanuka and Yasawa Islands, are two of the more accessible island groups. The Mamanukas is one where you'll find more islands with quite well-known international resorts on them. And in most cases, that's all that's on the island, is maybe a single resort. But then once you start getting out into the Yasawas, it used to be an area that was more geared towards backpackers. Now there's a few really high-end resorts out that way as well, but also a lot of just very very remote islands with these remote villages that you can go experience.
And we'll pause here to hear from our second sponsor. For our second sponsor spot, I'm very pleased to have DK Eyewitness Travel Guides as a sponsor of Amateur Traveler. I approached DK, as I've mentioned before on the show, because the Eyewitness Travel Guides are one of my favorite guidebook series. The guides are filled with gorgeous pictures, which I love, great history and cultural information. They also include great visual guides and maps to museums, walking tours, and neighborhoods. I said last week on the show that I had 19 of the guides, and I found a 20th. And the 20th is worth mentioning because that guide is Top 10 Hong Kong. I like the Top 10 guides when I'm doing, say, 2 to 3 days in a city because they're small enough to fit in a jeans back pocket and yet filled with enough information to keep me very busy and very happy. The name is a little bit of a misnomer because it's not just one Top 10 list. It's a Top 10 sites to see, but it's also Top 10 funky shops, areas of natural beauty, etc. A number of Top 10 lists for Hong Kong. Learn more about DK Eyewitness Travel Guides at DK.com.
And I'm curious, if someone is a backpacker, is there still a Fiji for them? It sounds like there's a lot of high-end resorts coming in, but I don't see a lot of backpackers doing the helicopter from the airport, for instance.
There's a boat called the... Oh, that's terrible. I can't remember the name. I think it may be the Yasawa Clipper, this yellow boat, that a high-speed catamaran that really is entirely set up to take backpackers out to some of the more remote islands. And out on the Yasawas, you would find places where it's not going to be as inexpensive as a Southeast Asia, for example, but you could certainly find places that were, I would say, in the $30 to $50 U.S. range per night.
Oh, that's not bad.
To stay out on some of those more remote islands as well. And there's a few where you'll actually find resorts that are sort of half and half. There's one on Yasawa Island itself that was a beautiful resort that they had burais, they're sort of Fijian-style bungalows that were fully kitted out and very modern, and those were going for $500 or $600 a night. But then they had a much more basic version of that just a few steps away on another portion of the island that you could get for $30 or $40 a night, but then some great shared facilities between both halves of the resort as well. So a number of different resorts that seem to cater to both ends of the market.
Excellent. So you had just barely seen Fiji before, and now you're seeing it a little more depth. What surprised you?
The friendliness of the people and how well they've been able to preserve their culture as well. I mean, one of the things you would find going out on the remote islands, even going in on the cruise ship, I mean, this wasn't 1,500 people getting off a cruise ship and changing the style of the island. It was, in the case of the week we were traveling, it was a ship that could hold 150, but I think there were only about 40 of us on board at the time. And many times on the island excursions, maybe there was 20 or 30 of you who would go out and visit the island. When you arrive there, you had to incorporate sort of traditional dress into what you were wearing going onto the island. So they have they called sulus, sort of like a sarong or wrap that both men and women are expected to wear to have their knees covered when they go onto the island.
Oh, interesting.
And the chief of the island, if you're not respecting their culture, will ask the boat to go back and won't allow you to come onto their island. A gift has to be presented to the chief as you arrive to allow you to go into the village. So they've really worked hard to preserve their traditional culture and really been able to maintain that.
What do you wish you had known before you went?
The difference between the main island that you land into, Viti Levu, and what you can experience around there, around Port Deneru, and the outer islands. Port Deneru was great as a stopover point and somewhere to acclimatize yourself to Fiji. We ended up on it was a little bit over 2 weeks, about 17, 18 days we were there. We probably spent the first three and I believe the last three in Port Deneru. I probably would have shaved down that portion of the trip and spent even more exploring the outer islands. Like an 11-day cruise versus a 7-day cruise would have been great because you could have got to even more remote locations. Yeah, for sure.
And if you're standing in the most beautiful spot in Fiji, where are you standing? What are you looking at?
For me, it was probably waking up morning on Malolo Island, stepping out of that beach bungalow onto a white sand beach. Looking out across from you is a perfectly shaped mountain out on the distance, out on the crystal clear water, and the sun rising above it was the most beautiful setting that I've seen probably anywhere in the world.
Okay, interesting. So to really experience Fiji, in your opinion, one thing you should eat, one thing you should drink, and one thing you should do.
Well, one thing you should drink is an easy one, is kava. Kava is a big part of the culture there. It almost has like an alcoholic type effect, but you don't get any hangover from it. It's a root that they grind up, and it's a huge part of the culture in Fiji. Every village you go into, one of the first things that will happen is a kava ceremony. Some very specific protocols about the way they make the kava, the way that you enjoy the kava together with the community. So that's something you've absolutely got to try when you're there, and there's lots of opportunities to try it.
And you say specific protocols, like what?
If I remember correctly, normally men who are invited to drink the kava first. There's the chief of the village and whoever is sort of considered the most senior person from the delegation that's visiting. Uh-huh. The chief who would give the drink to the senior person who is there. You've got to clap your hands in a certain way prior to receiving the kava bowl and drinking it. And then clap your hands in a certain pattern once you've given the kava bowl back as well. So a number of different sort of cultural things that you discover as you go along the way.
Did they give you a briefing as you headed out in the skiff from the ship, or how did you know?
Absolutely. There is no shortage of briefings on how to drink kava. You'll find it's a pretty popular part of the local culture. In terms of things to eat, probably the most Fijian meal we had was out on some of the outer islands. In this case, it was a group called the Sacred Islands. that we went to visit. And one of the evenings, they had a dinner that had been cooked entirely underground and hot stone, everything from an entire roast pig that was cooked there to yams and fresh fruit and exactly the sort of thing you would imagine in a South Pacific island like that. So in terms of something to eat, that's definitely something that you would want to do. And then one thing to do, I would say, is you've got to get underwater, whether that's snorkeling, diving. If you're not a snorkeler or diver, there's even some of the islands have glass bottom boats. In one or two cases, I think they've even got submarines that will take you around to see the underwater world there, because the reefs are really stunning. I mean, both soft and hard coral and just a huge variety of marine life.
Excellent. What warning you would give?
Don't expect to go snorkeling around Port Deneru. A lot of people see the picture postcard brochures. They get to that first resort, and the beaches look quite nice when you first arrive. You get out of the water, it's really murky water. And the local Fijians will tell you sharks are not uncommon there. It is murky water. It's probably not the best place to go snorkeling. So one area you would want to avoid for sure. And the other thing is, you would also want to do a bit of research in terms of time of year that you want to go there. Like any tropical location, there's typhoons and other things as well. So you'd want to definitely do your research and make sure you're going at a time where the weather's going to be the best, if what you're going there for is really to get that sort of tropical beach vacation.
And you were there what time of year? I don't remember.
We were there in June, and the weather was spectacular. I mean, I think in the 16 days, we maybe got one afternoon of rain when we were there. Other than that, it was great.
Most memorable local you met?
One of the things that was great on the cruise ship that we did is that they, if you had children under a certain age, I don't recall what the cutoff was, but it was mandatory that you had to hire a local Fijian nanny to watch over the children when they were on the boat. We had a great nanny with us, Tomasa, who just really, in the 7 days that we were traveling throughout these islands with her, really became part of the family. The kids were in love with her after the first hour they'd spent with her, and just somebody who taught them so much about her culture and the history of the islands and everything else as we were traveling through. And if you've got young kids and you're going on a vacation, it's pretty amazing to be able to have somebody there to help out, that when you want to go out diving or snorkeling or have a dinner while you're out for the 7 days on the boat, you've got somebody there who can help out as well.
When we talk about remote destinations like Fiji, one of the questions we usually ask is, when did you feel closest to home and when did you feel furthest to home? So when was it very familiar and when was it unfamiliar?
Probably the first time going in and doing one of the village visits, you really realized how different this was from home. I mean, the fact that just the lifestyle that people live there on a day-to-day basis was so foreign to what we do in North America. They still are living a very, and I wouldn't say this is everywhere. I mean, when you go into the big cities are very modern and very much like a North American city would be. But when you go into the more remote village kind of locations, it's like stepping back in time. And that was really probably the place where it was most different.
And this also isn't the Polynesian Cultural Center. I mean, you're walking into the village and then the day that you leave, it's going to be the same way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's the types of songs and dance and ceremony and things that are being performed isn't just being done for tourists. I mean, this is part of the regular day-to-day life of the village and the culture of the village. So that was one of the great parts to experience.
Okay. Well, it feels like we're winding this down a little bit. Is there anything else that you think that people need to know before they book their trip to Fiji?
One other location that was really spectacular, and it was a tough one to get to. It was out in the Sawa Island group on one of the more remote islands, a place called Sawa Ilau Caves. Important part of sort of Fijian culture and history. It's played into a number of sort of battles that have happened between tribal groups on the island. So a lot of history there, but just a great sort of place for a soft adventure day where there's cliff diving, there's crystal clear waters and a really fun way to spend an afternoon.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Fiji.
Our daughter being scooped up and taken away by a saleswoman at a local store.
I appreciate that you can laugh about that. I'm thinking that wouldn't be the first reaction for a lot of people.
Well, and I think if it had happened to us on our first day in Fiji, it would have been terrifying. But it would happen near the tail end of the trip, and you got to know the culture, and it certainly was terrifying for a moment until you found her. But then you instantly realized what had happened and why it had happened. And that's certainly something I hadn't experienced anywhere else in the world, and I think is a very unique Fijian moment for sure.
One thing you should remember to pack when you go to Fiji.
Your snorkel and mask.
All right. And finish this sentence. You really know you're in Fiji when what?
When you drink your first bowl of kava.
And if you had to summarize Fiji in just three words, what three words would you choose?
Relaxing.
Okay.
Peaceful and cultural, I guess, would be the three.
Excellent. And David, where can people hear or read more about your travels?
Well, on my travel podcast, travelin10.com, I've got a video cast that I've done from Vololo Island that put up there recently. I've also got one coming up shortly on sort of cruising around the islands and some of the experience there. And we'll probably have another cast on Natty and the main island and some of the things that you can see in that area as well.
Excellent. And Travelin 10 is about the same age as Amateur Traveler. I can't honestly remember which one of us started first, but it was within a couple months of each other, so it probably doesn't matter at this point.
That's
Although,
right.
It doesn't come out quite as often, I believe.
That's right. You're a little more prolific than I am. I am more a monthly podcaster versus, but you're doing at least one a week now, aren't you?
Yeah, about six a month or so, if you count This Week in Travel also. Excellent. Well, David, thanks so much for coming back on Amateur Traveler. It's been a while, and sharing with us your obvious love for Fiji.
Happy to do it, and hope we get to hit the road together somewhere else around the world soon.
Excellent. Sounds great.
We haven't been doing as many news spots on this show because I do that on This Week in Travel more these days, but we do have a news story that's coming out of Venice that just has to be mentioned. According to a story originally in the Daily Mail, Venice is going to ban rolling suitcases. Venetians apparently are fed up with the tourist noise pollution in their picturesque town. If you are caught with a rolling suitcase making noise on the cobblestone streets, you will be fined 500 euros. One alternative, of course, is staying elsewhere in the Veneto and then just taking a boat over and leaving your suitcase behind. And, of course, also leaving your hotel dollars someplace else. In news of the community, I heard from Sarah, who took me up on the suggestion to go see Kamakura when in Tokyo, Japan. And Sarah writes, "You were right. I did love Kamakura. It was a fantastic day filled with shrines, temples, the beach, and ending with a beautiful sunset of Mount Fuji from Enoshima Island. Thanks so much for suggesting it to your listeners. I also spent 4 days in the Nagano Prefecture during my time in Japan, and I would wholeheartedly recommend it as a destination. I think it is often overlooked as a side trip from Tokyo. Most people seem to go to Kyoto or Osaka, but it is such a beautiful and special place. The incredible mountains, onsens, delicious food, and kind people make it an unforgettable visit. I even visited a 100-year-old wasabi farm. If one of your travel peers ever happens to pitch it as a future episode, I say go for it." Thanks very much, Sarah. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. Don't forget to answer our trippy question of the week, and also visit our sponsor, DK.com. A transcript of this episode is thanks to JWayTravel.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.